an Osho talk. From Unconsciousness to Consciousness, number 25.
With no God, no devil, what is religion all about? Does a sannyasin need a religion?
Religion has nothing to do with God, devil, heaven and hell. The word religion has to be understood. The word is significant. It means putting the parts together. So that the parts are no more parts, but become whole. The root meaning of the word religion is to put things together in such a way that the part is no more part, but becomes the whole. Each part becomes the whole in togetherness. Each part separate is dead. Joined together, a new quality appears, the quality of the whole. And to bring that quality into your life is the purpose of religion. It has nothing to do with God or devil. But the way religions have functioned into the world, they have changed its whole quality, the very fabric. Instead of making it a science of integration, so that man is not many, but one. Ordinarily, you are many, a crowd. To melt this crowd into one wholeness, that everything in you start functioning, in harmony to everything else within you. And there is no conflict, no division, no fight, nobody higher, nobody lower. You are just one harmonious whole. The religions around the world have helped humanity to forget even the meaning of the word. They are against the integrated man. Because the integrated man does not need God, does not need the priest, does not need the church. The integrated man is enough unto himself. He is whole. And to me, that makes him holy, because he is whole. He is so fulfilled that there is no psychological need for a father figure, a God somewhere in heaven taking care of you. He is so blissful in the moment. You cannot make him afraid for tomorrow. The tomorrow does not exist for the integrated man. Only this moment is all. Neither there are yesterdays nor tomorrows. You cannot manipulate the integrated man through these childish, stupid strategies that if you do this, you will attain to heaven and all its pleasures. If you do this, you will fall into hell and you will suffer for eternity. The integrated man will simply laugh at all this nonsense. He has no fear of the future. You cannot create hell. He has no greed for the future. You cannot create heaven. He needs no protection. Nobody to guide him. Nobody to take him somewhere. He has no goals, no motivations. Each moment is so complete. That it is not waiting to be lighted by another moment which will come sometime in this life or maybe in the next life. Each moment is full, overfull, overflowing. And all that he knows is a tremendous gratitude for this beautiful existence. That too he does not say, because the existence does not understand language. That gratitude is his very being. So whatsoever he is doing, there is gratitude. If he is not doing anything, just sitting silently, there is gratitude. It is not something that like Mohammedan 5 today, thank God. But what you are doing between those 5 times? You are not thanking between those 5 times. So your thankfulness is just a ritual. It is not your life. Just Sila has brought to me a brochure from a Christian society which celebrates a week of forgiveness around the world. Any city can become member of the society. Only the city. Then the city appears on its world map of the Society of Forgiveness. And the people who are doing such work really look serious, but what they are doing is so childish, so idiotic. Monday you forgive yourself. This way it goes. Tuesday you forgive your neighbors. Wednesday you forgive your enemies. Then forgive your nation. Then forgive all the nations. The whole program for the 7 days. And the covering letter says, if you do forgive yourself, the nation, the nations, the whole world, you will achieve to immense happiness. Repentance is bad. Resentment is bad. Repentance is good. Now these people have a world map with it on which cities are there. So the association must have been working for years. This is a new city, so they had invited us to become members of their foolish game. Once a year, 7 days you forgive. Then what you do the whole year? And if you continue to forgive the whole year, then for next year, your membership is finished. Because the next year, you cannot have the week to forgive. There is nobody left to forgive. You have forgiven all. But these people have been doing it for years, and every year. So the forgiveness does not transform you. In the covering letter it says, be always the first to forgive. Don't miss the chance to be the first to forgive. Be the leader. Be the master of forgiveness. Do you see the point? Even in forgiveness, there is competition. There is ego game. You be the first. But if everybody is trying to be the first, then who can be the first? Somebody has to be the second. He has lost the game already. He is no more master of his fate and destiny. So be quick. Before the other forgives you, you forgive. So remain the master of your destiny and the leader and the first. And great will be your benefit. Now, to forgive someone, first you have to be angry, enraged, against, hateful, resentful. In some way, thinking to destroy the other. If these things are not there, how can you forgive? You must carry the wound the whole year for these 7 days of forgiveness. Every February, those 7 days will come. And that time, you do your best. Be the first. And certainly, the person who forgives more will have more benefits. But who can forgive more if you are not carrying resentment in you at all? How can you forgive? For what you can forgive? For example, I cannot forgive anybody in the whole world. I don't see any reason for anybody to be forgiven by me. I am not carrying any wounds, any resentment. While I was reading the pamphlet, I tried to figure out that if I have to forgive, whom I should forgive. I was absolutely empty and no answer, no name appeared that this person I should forgive. Because in the first place, I have never been in the attitude of resentfulness. I don't have any enemy in the world. There are millions of people who think they are my enemies, but as far as I am concerned, there is nobody who is my enemy. So if I try to forgive, whom I am going to forgive? It was really a pleasure to see that society, and it is a worldwide society. And hundreds of cities are members of the society. And they must be thinking they are doing something immensely significant. But deep down they are sowing the seed of ego in you. Be the first. Religion has done so much against humanity. With good intentions, those people were not functioning with bad intentions, but they were certainly idiots, not knowing exactly what they are doing and how the human psychology functions. They exploited men . Take for instance, Jesus says man cannot live by bread alone. True, absolutely true. Because he needs many fictions to live. Just bread won't do. He needs God, he needs devil, he needs heaven, he needs hell, and the popes and the church and the prayer and the forgiveness. Man cannot live by bread alone, Jesus says. Perfectly right. Take all these fictions and suddenly this question will arise. If there is no God, if there is no devil, then what is religion all about? All these religions have given you fictions. Because your psychology has certain needs. Either you go beyond mind, that's what real religion is, or you create fictions so that your mind does not feel empty, meaningless, lonely, a driftwood, with no goal ahead, no source behind, one of the greatest needs of human mind is to be needed. Existence seems to be absolutely indifferent to you. You cannot say it needs you, or can you? Without you, things were going perfectly well. The sunrise was there, the sunset was there, the flowers were flowering, the seasons were coming and going. If you were not there, it made no difference at all. One day you will not be there again, and it will not make any difference at all. Existence simply goes on and on. It does not give you the satisfaction that is your greatest need, to be needed. On the contrary, it gives you the feeling that it does not care. Perhaps it does not even know that you are. I am reminded of one of Panchtantra's story. They are tremendously psychological. An elephant is passing over a bridge on a river, and a mosquito is sitting over the elephant. The elephant is so heavy, and the bridge is just temporary bridge. Poor villagers make it when the rains are gone and floods have disappeared and the river becomes small. They make temporary wooden bridges for themselves. For 8 months they are perfectly okay. But it was not made for an elephant, because in that poor village nobody could own an elephant. It was just a wild elephant that had come to the bridge and was passing the bridge. The mosquito sitting over the head of the elephant said, "Uncle, it seems my and your weight is too much for the bridge." The elephant said, "I was not even aware that you are sitting over my head. What are you doing there?" Now this is a small story, The elephant is not even aware of the mosquito, but mosquito thinks me and you together are too much for this poor bridge. Each man in this vast universe is far smaller in comparison. The mosquito and the elephant there is not much difference between the mosquito and the elephant. But between a man and the existence, the difference is immeasurable. But remember, man is doing the same thing. If you are going to get married, you go to the astrologer to ask, are the stars favorable? That's what the poor mosquito was saying, uncle. Trying to relate with the elephant. You are trying to relate with the stars. Are they favorable for your marriage? And of course, the astrologer is going to exploit you. I was for a few months in Raipur. As a professor teaching there, I have traveled all over India, but Raipur seems to be a strange place. You will not be able to pass 2-3 houses and you will find a great board declaring that here lives a great astrologer. Two, three houses you pass and somebody who knows how to bring ghosts out of you. How to drive devils out of you. That kind of man in Raipur is called Ojha, who drives devils, ghosts from people's mind. And in those days I used to walk at least 8 miles every day, so I walked almost every nook and corner of the city of Raipur. And everywhere there were boards on the walls, advertisements. There must be people who are suffering from ghosts and devils. Otherwise, how many so many people are doing business and doing well? Because they seem to be the most established people. Just in front of my house, there was one astrologer. Very famous. People from far away places used to come. For everything, not only marriage. In India, If you are starting a business, you will go to the astrologer. On what day, at what time, the stars are favorable to me. That time, the opening ceremony of your shop. You are going for traveling, first you will go to the astrologer. What time? I am going south. Is it favorable with the stars that I can go to south on such a day, or should I wait? And the astrologer will give you the date, the time. And I saw that man doing it the whole day. And sometimes the train leaves in the middle of the night. But you have to leave at the time the astrologer has said. So you leave your house in the middle of the day, because that is the time when stars are favorable. That time you leave the house, and then you stay on the station for 12 hours, wait for the train. But from the house you should leave at the right moment when all the stars are favorable. One of my friends, he was also a professor, but he was a professor of Sanskrit. He was a great believer in all kinds of nonsense. Whenever he will go to visit his family, he will ask this astrologer. And sometimes it was very difficult, because he will say, for this month you cannot go out. This month is not favorable for you at all. And he will come to me and say, this is very difficult. This is the month I have got the leave granted. And now this astrologer is saying, this month I cannot leave. I said, you wait. Let me see the astrologer. I know him perfectly well. He lives just in front of my house. And there are ways. And just you give 1 rupee note to the astrologer. And then he asks you, what date, what time? So I will give him 1 rupee and tell him that this poor fellow will come. You please give him this date, this time, so he can catch the train directly and go home. I arrange many marriages. Just I had to give 1 rupee to him. One day he said, but you are a strange fellow. You go on giving rupees for others, their travel, their business, their marriage. I said, I enjoy the game, and I see their foolishness, and I see your cunningness. And just in 1 rupee, to see this whole game, it is not costly. And this is not only you, this is what all your forefathers have been doing. You decide about people's marriages, and every day your wife is nagging you, beating you. What had happened to your astrology? At least for yourself, you should have chosen the right moment. And these fools go on coming to you knowing perfectly well that it is very difficult to find a more hand-packed husband than this. Still they go on asking that I am going to be married. Will this marriage prove successful, peaceful? And they are asking you. And while they are sitting there, your wife comes in and starts shouting at you and screaming at you. And those fools can't see even this. And what do you know about stars? But the trick is, the astrology book of Hindus is the same. So you inquire one astrologer, he will give the same answer. You go to Banaras, you inquire another astrologer, he will give you the same answer, because they both depend on the same astrology book. You go to Calcutta and you will get the same answer. That makes you convinced that these astrologers must be knowing, because three persons in three cities cannot conspire against you, and they don't know each other, and they don't have any idea that you are going to consult other people. You can consult all over India and you will find the same answer, because it is the same book, and they consult the same book. Nobody bothers about the stars, nobody knows about the stars, but what the book says. Man's greatest need, I said to you, is to be needed. Otherwise, he feels shaken. The trees, the clouds, the sun, the moon, the stars, the mountains, nobody seems to be concerned with you. The whole existence seems to be indifferent. Whether you are not, nobody cares. This is a very shaking condition for the mind. The religion comes in, the so-called religion. The real religion will try in every way that you drop this need, that there is no need for anybody to need you. That asking for it, you are asking for a fiction. But the so-called religion, which exists in so many forms on the earth, Hinduism, Judaism, Christianity, Mohammedanism, Buddhism, Jainism, and so many isms. There are 300 religions on the earth. But they are doing exactly the same thing. They all do the same work. they give you the same fulfillment. They say there is a God who cares about you, who looks after you, who is concerned about your well-being. So much so that He sends a holy book to guide your life. He sends His only begotten Son to help you to be on the right path. He sends messiahs, prophets, so that you don't go astray, because then they exploit your second. Because there is devil who is trying in every possible way to take you to the wrong path. Hinduism has a story. Gautam Buddha became very influential while he was alive. He was a man of tremendous charisma. And he was very logical, rational, against all superstitions. The Brahmins became very much afraid, because this man will destroy their whole profession. Brahmins have lived only on your psychological exploitation for thousands of years. Their whole function is to exploit your psychological needs. The Pope, the bishop, the priest, they all are doing the same thing. You have a certain psychological need, and they know that this need can be exploited. You also have a certain fear in you, which is bound to be. It has happened since the moment you have come out of the womb of your mother. That separation. Before that separation, there was no fear in you, because you were not lonely. The mother's womb is the most comfortable situations. You were just floating in the mother's womb. All your needs were fulfilled without any work on your part. There was no anxiety, no problem, no starvation, no unemployment, no war, no death. You were completely isolated, protected. And all your needs were fulfilled. So the child in the mother's womb has no fear. There is no reason. But once he comes out of the mother's womb, a great fear runs through his whole being. He is being taken as if you take a tree out of earth, uproot it. The whole tree is shaking and trembling. You are taking out its roots. You are destroying its very base. It knows no other nourishment. It knows no other way to exist. The earth has taken its care and you are uprooting it. And I am not talking poetry. Now there are scientific instruments which can detect whether the tree is feeling fear or not. Just like a cardiogram, they immediately show you fix your instrument to the tree which is rooted in the ground, flowering, playing in the winds, dancing in the sun. And the cardiogram, the graph, is very harmonious. Same. There is no change. A tremendous stillness inside the tree's being. Then you uproot it. And suddenly the graph trembles. Lines starts going up and down. The harmony is lost. And as you pull the tree more out, there is chaos on the graph. The tree is going through tremendous anguish. And you will be surprised to know that when you are doing this to one tree, other trees which are around, their graphs also start showing fear. If it is happening to one tree, it can happen to them. It is not far away. If this man is doing this thing to this tree, he can do this to me. All the trees around, all their grafts start becoming afraid, fear sowing, anxiety entering. When the child comes out of the womb, it is the greatest shock of his life. Even death will not be this big a shock, because death will come without warning. Death will come when most probably he will be unconscious. But while he is coming out of mother's womb, he is conscious. In fact, for the first time he is becoming conscious. 9 months long sleep, peaceful sleep, is disturbed. And then you cut the thread that joins him with the mother. The moment you cut that thread that joins him with the mother, you have created a fearful individual. This is not the right way, but this has been done up to now. Unknowingly, this has helped the priests and the so-called religions to exploit men. The child should be taken away from the mother more slowly, more gradually. The shock should not be there, and it can be arranged. A scientific arrangement is possible. There should not be glaring lights in the room, because the child has lived for 9 months in absolute darkness, and he has very fragile eyes, which have never seen light, and all your hospitals, glaring lights, tube lights, and the child suddenly faces the light. Most of the people are suffering from weak eyes because of this. Later on, they have to use glasses. No animal needs it. Have you seen any animal with glasses reading the newspaper? Their eyes are perfectly healthy, whole life to the point of death. It is only men, and the beginning is at the very beginning. No, the child should be given birth in darkness, are in a very soft light, candles perhaps. Darkness would be the best, but if a little light is needed, then candles will do. And what the doctors have been doing up to now, they don't give even a little time for the child to be acquainted with the new reality. The way they welcome the child is so ugly. They hang the child with his feet in their hands and they slap his bottoms. The idea behind this stupid ritual is that this will help the child to breathe. Because in the mother's womb, he was not breathing on his own. The mother was breathing for him, eating for him, doing everything for him. But to be welcomed in the world, hanging upside down, with a slap on your bottoms, is not a very good beginning. But the doctor is in a hurry. Otherwise, the child will start breathing on his own. He has to be left on the mother's belly, on top of the mother's belly, before the joining thread is cut. He should be left on the mother's belly. He was under the belly, inside, now he is outside. That is not a great change. The mother is there, he can touch, he can feel, he knows the vibe. He is perfectly aware that this is his home. He has come out, but this is his home. let him be with the mother a little longer, so he becomes acquainted with the mother from the outside. From the inside, he knows her. And don't cut the thread that joins him till he starts breathing on his own. Right now, what is done, we cut the thread and slap the child, so he has to breathe. But this is forcing him. This is violent. And absolutely unscientific and unnatural. Let him first breathe on his own. It will take few minutes. Don't be in such a hurry. It is a question of a man's whole life. You can smoke your cigarette 2-3 minutes later. You can whisper sweet nothings to your girlfriend few minutes later. It is not going to harm anybody. What is the rush? You can't give him 3 minutes. Not more than that a child needs. Just left on his own, within 3 minutes he starts breathing. When he starts breathing, he becomes confident that he can live on his own. Then you can cut the thread. It is useless now. It will not give a shock to the child. Then the most significant thing is, don't put him into blankets and in the bed. No. For 9 months he was without blankets, naked, without pillows, without bed seat, without bed. Don't make such a change so quick. He needs a small tub with the same solution of water that was in mother's womb. It is exactly the ocean water. The same amount of salt, same amount of chemicals, exactly the same. That is again a proof that life must have happened first in the ocean. It still happens in the oceanic water. That's why when a woman is pregnant, she starts eating salty things. Because the womb goes on absorbing the salt. It needs for the child the exact salty water that exists in the ocean. So just make the same water in a small tub and let the child lie down in the tub. And he will feel perfectly welcomed. This is the situation he is acquainted with. In Japan, one Zen monk has tried a tremendous experiment that a 3-month-old child can swim. Slowly he has been coming down. First he tried with 9-month-old children, then with 6-month-old children, now with 3-month-old children. And I say to him that you are still far away. Even the child just born is capable to swim, because he has been swimming in his mother's womb. So give him a chance similar to the mother's womb. And he will be more confident. And no priest can exploit him so easily, telling him about hellfire and all nonsense. But ordinarily, as humanity exists now, on the one hand, it needs a God, protector, guide, help, and a hell, so that he remains afraid of all the wrong ways that the priest thinks are wrong. And what is wrong and what is right in every society differs. So right and wrong are determined by a particular society. They don't have any existential value. Yes, there is a state of awareness when you go beyond mind and you can see things directly without any prejudice, without any ideology covering your eyes. When you can see directly, you can immediately know what is right and what is wrong. Nobody needs to be told. No commandments need to be given. And each society goes on propounding, this is right and that is wrong. But how to prevent you from what they call wrong? The trouble is, whatever they call is wrong is mostly natural. It attracts you. It is wrong, but it is natural. So the deep attraction for the natural is there. They have to create so much fear that it becomes more powerful than the natural attraction. Hence the hell has to be invented. There are religions who are not satisfied with one hell. And I can understand why they are not satisfied with one hell. Christianity is satisfied with one hell for the simple reason, because the Christian hell is eternal. Lengthwise, but Hindus, Jainas, Buddhists don't have an eternal hell. So they have to go vertical. Seven hells. And each hell goes on becoming more and more torturous, more and more inhuman. And I wonder, these people were called saints who have described in all gory detail the hells. These people, if they had any chance, would have become Adolf Hitler's, Joseph Stalin's, Mao Zedong very easily. They had all the ideas. Just all that they were missing was power. But in a subtle way, they had power too, but not right now. Their power was in their being the head priest, the Pope, the Shankaracharya, but that power helped them to throw you into hell sometime in future after death. Death itself is such a fear. But that was not enough for them, because the natural instincts are really very powerful. And why they were against natural instincts? Because those natural instincts go against the vested interests. Let me explain to you. In India, Krishna had 16,000 wives. Now, what about 15,999 men who have lost their wives? Those wives were stolen, forcibly taken away. They were mothers, they were wives. Some were unmarried, most of them were married. Any woman that was beautiful was enough for Krishna to take her into the concentration camp of his wives. It must have been almost a city, 16,000 wives. Now, how to prevent those 15,999 men, if they all join together, they can kill this man. They can take away their wives. They have to be prevented. The priest has to invent ways. Because the priest is protected by Krishna, he has the power, temporal power in his hands, the army, the court, the law. He protects the priest. Hindu law says that if you kill a Sudra, an untouchable, then 10 years in jail is enough punishment. But if you kill a Brahmin, then death penalty, not only in one life, but in coming 7 lives, again and again you will be murdered, killed. Only then the punishment will be over. The temporal power protects the priest. The priest protects the temporal power. The priest says that Krishna is no ordinary man. He is God's perfect incarnation. And you should be happy that he has chosen your wife to be his consort. You should rejoice. You are fortunate and blessed. You will have great joys coming to you in paradise. So don't be resentful. Don't be angry. Don't think in terms of revolt. Rather, take it easily, happily, joyously, in fact, gratefully, that he had chosen your wife, not somebody else. Now, the natural instinct of the man would have been to fight with this man. He has taken the mother of his children. He has taken his wife, and against her will. And what kind of society is this? But no, his natural instinct is destroyed in two ways, double ways. One, if you accept it willingly, you will benefit immense pleasures, many beautiful women, thousandfold joys in heaven. If you are resentful, angry, become violent, or do something against Krishna, who is God's incarnation, you will suffer in seventh hell. So you can choose. Anything that was against the vested interests, for example, poverty. All the religions teach, blessed are the poor. It is not only Jesus. Jesus says it very accurately, fully, in one sentence, in one maxim. Blessed are the poor, for they shall inherit the kingdom of God. But this is the teaching of all the religions. You should accept your poverty as a blessing, as a God-given gift. This is just a test of your faith. If you can pass through this fire test of poverty without grumbling, without in any way thinking that this is unjust, if you can go through it as a God-given gift, then the kingdom of God is yours. It is great consolation to Lazarus when Jesus says to him, It happened, Lazarus was very poor. And the richest man in the village was giving a feast on his birthday. Lazarus was hungry, thirsty. Passing from that village, he asked for some water. And the servants threw him out. They said, "Don't you see that our master is giving a feast and great guests have gathered, and you, just a beggar, you have some guts to enter inside the house and ask for water? Go to hell. Go away from here as quickly as possible." Jesus says to Lazarus, "Don't be worried. You will see in paradise. You will be enjoying all the pleasures. And this man will be suffering in hell fire, thirsty, and will ask Lazarus, 'Give me some water.'" Great consolation. But a great strategy to protect the rich against the poor. The rich are few, the poor are many. Once they get the idea that it is not a blessing but a curse, they will kill all these rich people. It is both ways good, a consolation for the poor that poverty is a blessing, and a protection for the rich that the poor cannot revolt. Religions have been the cause why poverty goes on existing in the world. Otherwise, there is no reason at all for it. Particularly now, when science and technology can transform this whole earth into paradise, the religious people will not like this earth to be turned into paradise, because then what will happen to their paradise? They would love that the earth remains as poor, as starved, as hungry, as sick as it is. Because upon this their whole business depends. The rich donates to the churches because the church protects. The poor donates, who has not even enough to eat, he donates to the churches because it is the church who gives guidance, and this life is small, and this life is not much. Much has passed, a little is left, that too will pass. Then there is eternal life of eternal joys. The church shows the way. Jesus shows the way. Natural instincts like sex hunger, these religious people have been teaching you fasting. Now that is against nature. Fasting is as bad as too much eating. If you go on stuffing, overloading yourself, that is unnatural. There is something wrong psychologically with you. Perhaps you are feeling so empty that you go on stuffing with anything that comes in your hands. Just to fill your psychological emptiness. And then there is a person who is fasting. Fasting is a slow suicide. He is eating himself. Very strange. Jainas in India are against meat eating, against any non-vegetarian food. I was attending one of their conferences, an All India Jaina conference. So all their sects and all their great acharyas, their great masters, were present. I asked a simple thing. I asked them that you continue to preach fasting. Jainas fast the most in the whole world. But have you considered a simple fact that when you are fasting, you are eating your own meat? Because every day, in the beginning, 2 pounds from your weight disappear. Where they go? Later on, 1 pound will disappear because you can't afford 2 pounds. Your stock is becoming less and less. A very healthy person can live for 3 months without eating. That much food is stocked within his body. But nobody is that healthy. To be that healthy, you have to be again a hunter in the forest. There is no other way. And those hunters had to fast sometimes for many days, because hunting is not something like a fridge. You go and you open and everything is available. You may find something today, you may not find for a week, for 2 weeks. The hunter needs some reserve food for those days when he cannot get any food. When he gets the food, he eats too much. When he does not get the food, he fasts. But jainas are not hunters. They are not even cultivators. They are simply businessmen. To teach fasting to these people, every year for 10 days is their holy days. When many people fast for 10 days continuously, and I know many of my friends, in those 10 days they think only of food and nothing else. They cannot think of anything else. You talk about a beautiful movie, they will say, not now. You put before them a Playboy magazine, they are not interested. A man who has been fasting for 7 days, do you think will be interested in a Playboy magazine? He will not even take it up. But I have taken them in my car just to see what happens to them. Because in India, in many cities, this is the situation, that all the sweet shops, restaurants are in one street. So I will take them to that street and just watch their reaction. Psychologists have become aware of the fact that if we give you 10 nude pictures, and just to see them, and you may not be aware that what the psychologist is doing, he will be watching your eyes. The girl that you like, immediately your eyes will become big. The focus will become big. The lens of the eye will open more immediately. He can say which girl you liked out of the 10 pictures without asking you. And you will be surprised that he is doing some magic or what. How he came to read my mind. There is no need to read your mind. Just to watch your eyes. If your eye lens becomes suddenly bigger, that means it wants to eat the girl. Just to absorb it. I have seen the same thing happen to these jaina people when they will see sweets. I will slow down the car and I will watch their eyes. Their eyes so big. A naked woman will not do any difference to their eyes. They have been 8 days, 9 days, or it is the 10th day and they have not eaten anything. Who bothers to eat a girl? Who has the energy to bother? But looking at a sweet shop, and you can see suddenly their face becomes alive, their eye lenses become big. They are continuously thinking, even in the night, they are dreaming of food. For 10 days they do nothing except fantasizing food. Now this is against their religion. Their priest say to them that when you are fasting, you should not think of food. First, fasting is unnatural. Second, when you are fasting, then it is natural to think of food. Now that too is prohibited, that you cannot think of food. So what the jainas do when they fast, they go to the temple. They listen the whole day. Many monks go on giving the sermons. They go on listening to their sermons. Scriptures are read and they go on listening to the scriptures. And I have been into these places. And I will see somebody I know and I will go close to him and shake him and I will say, are you really listening to that man? Are you are thinking about some food? He said, how you came to know? In fact, that man reminded me of my cook. And I was feeling very bad that to think of a great sage as your cook. It is. But how did you come to know that you have come to ask me? I said, I'm just by the way. I go on searching for things. So what do you are you doing in this temple? For what? The whole only purpose was that in the temple they will forget about the food. But how the temple can make anybody forget about the food when the body is hungry and each cell of the body is asking for food? Why religions have put you against your natural instincts? For the simple reason, to make you feel guilty. Let me repeat this word, guilt. This is their focus of destroying you, exploiting you, molding you, dehumiliating you, creating disrespect about yourself. Once guilt is created, once you start feeling that I am a guilty person, a sinner, their work is done. Then who can save you? Then the savior is needed. First, create the disease. I have heard about 2 young men. Their business was, one man will enter in the town in the night and throw coal tar on people's doors, windows, and left the town. By the morning, everybody was puzzled. Their doors and their windows are destroyed, and now how to clean it? And then suddenly the second man will appear. They were partners in the business. And he will announce that I clean coal tar. So everybody was rushing for him, that you please come to my house and clean my windows. And the other man is doing the work in other town. By the time he is finished cleaning this town, he has prepared the other town for him to clean. One goes on making people's houses dirty, the other goes on cleaning them. Both are partners. 50-50 is the gain. The priest first creates guilt, that is, throwing coal tar on your face. Now somebody is needed to clean it. And it is not the visible face, it is your invisible reality that he goes on throwing coal tar on it. You cannot find any way to clean it on your own, because you don't know what this reality is. All that you know is the priest has convinced you that you are guilty. And he has absolute explanations for it, that you think about sex, that you think about food when you are fasting, that in the night you should not drink water, nothing should go in your mouth in the night. But in summer in India, it is so difficult not to drink water. Even small children are not allowed by the parents. Even small children will steal water in the night. From the very beginning, you are making them thieves and making them feel guilty because they know they have done something wrong. In my house, till my grandmother was alive, tomatoes were not allowed. Because according to her, the redness of the tomato looks like meat. And I asked her many times, "Have you ever seen meat?" She had never seen meat, but she says, "I know meat looks like tomato. Don't bring tomato in the house." I had not eaten tomato up to the age of 17. I had not eaten onions up to the age 21, because they were not allowed in the house. It was a great sin to eat onion. Potato. Now, have you seen more innocent people than potatoes? But anything that grows under the ground, Jainism is against it. Anything growing under the ground, Jains don't allow, because the sun rays are not reaching to it. It is heavy. Its heaviness they turn into something spiritual. By eating it, you will be going down. It will make you heavy. And you need to be light. To have wings, you need to be light. So nothing that grows under the earth should be eaten. A strange argument. But if for thousands of years it has been repeated, people have believed it. They are still believing it. And once you eat, then you feel guilty, because it is against your conscience. The conscience is created by the society. You ask me that if there is no God, no devil, then what is the need of religion? Then only is the need of religion. When God is there and devil is there, there is no space for religion. Those two are enough to occupy the whole space. Those two are such big fictions that there is no space left for religion. First, you have to kill God and devil both completely to make a space for religion. Then religion will not come to exploit your psychological needs. It will come to transform your being so that you can go above your psychological needs and you can see that those needs are not true. For example, if you are in your psychological needs, then you are lonely. If you are beyond your psychological needs, you know you are alone. And aloneness has a strength. Loneliness is weakness. Loneliness is asking always for the other. It is dependent on the other. Hence, the other has power over you. You have power over the other. What power a husband has over the wife? What power the wife has over the husband? Simply this, that without the other you feel lonely. And when you feel lonely, fear arises. It's strange. Two cowards, two persons full of fear, together start feeling great. Their loneliness is doubled. They should feel more lonely now. And in fact, that happens sooner or later after the honeymoon. You cannot find wife and husband. They may be sitting together, but they are not together. They are both lonely. And then they are angry because the other is not fulfilling the need. So any excuse is enough to fight. At least fighting, they forget the loneliness. Fighting also fulfills a purpose. But when you go above your psychology, just the other day I was telling you how you can go above your psychology, your mind, those three divisions, how you can reach to the fourth, the Turiya. And when you reach to the fourth, suddenly you see a transfiguration. It is not loneliness. It is simply aloneness, and it is a truth. And it is so beautiful to be alone. Nobody. Taking any space, covering any space in you. No need to be needed by anybody. No need to need anybody. Such a great strength that for the first time you feel you are born. Religion is the way to get out of the mind. Because mind is fragmentary, divided, crowded, many. And when you go above it, consciousness is one, undivided, indivisible, individual. And to know that indivisible consciousness is to know all. Nothing more is needed. And you ask me, do your sannyasins need religion? Not the religion that you know about, but the religiousness that I am talking about. And in fact, I cannot say that the sannyasins need religiousness. To be a sannyasin is to be religious. Unless you are religious, how you can be a sannyasin? But religion, remember again, in my sense of the word, the sannyasin knows he is alone, knows that there is no God, no devil, no hell, no heaven, knows what is harmonious for him, so he does it. And what is disharmonious for him, so he does not do it. He knows what brings blessings to me, he does it. And he knows what creates unnecessary suffering. He drops doing it. It is not a question of stopping, not doing it. He simply drops it. The moment you see that you are carrying a scorpion in your hand, is there any need to tell you, please drop it? Before anybody says drop it, you would have dropped it. All that is needed is to know that you are carrying a scorpion in the hand. Consciousness makes you aware, simply aware, what is right, what is wrong. And the right starts happening and the wrong starts disappearing.
The word content and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.